Concession number 33503, reel 3.
Not very far away, but our feet were just like lumps of lead and we were making very heavy going of it. But we eventually got there, just on the outskirts of the town. And it caused a bit of surprise. The so-called camp was nothing more or less than a house. Just an ordinary house. Fairly large. Three-storey. Could be anywhere. Could be in London, anywhere. It had a small garden in the front. And as we found out later, a larger garden at the back. Our German soldier knocked at the door, or rang the bell. The door opened. It was opened by a German soldier. Corporal. Feldwebel, they called him. And he just stood there and he looked at us. His eyes were wide open, his mouth drooped, wide. You'd almost see what was going through his mind. What the hell have we got here? And he just stared. The now German guard opened his mouth and started to talk. Jan later gave me an interpretation. Apparently went like this. These six British soldiers are prisoners of war. They've just come off the march, the big march. They've just come off the march because they're too weak to go on. And I've been told to drop them at the nearest prisoner of war camp and to leave them here. If you don't like it, it's just too bad. Sam Ferriand, I'm off. And with that, he turned and went.
Okay.
To cut a long story short, the German took us inside the hall, passage of the house, shut the door. And very shortly, two other Germans arrived. They started talking, and then Jan spoke to them in German. And from then on, Jan did the interpretation. Apparently, the Germans were at a loss to know what to do, but they knew they had to do something. So they took us in one of the rooms. It turned out to be a kitchen. And after a bit, we had some food. Some soup, stew, potatoes and things like that. And it turned out that this camp was a small working camp and there were South Africans in it only. South Africans came in the war along with the Australians and New Zealanders. And when they were taken prisoner, they were usually kept together as far as they could. Unless they went to a big camp, but in a small working camp, say, like most other people, they stuck together. And as I say, this was a South African prison war camp, and to us it looked like home from homes. The only camps I'd ever had contact with in my 4 years were surrounded by rows of barbed wire, machine gun and searchlight towers, and Alsatian dogs that bit. Anyway, it appears the South Africans, or most of them, were out of work. It was during the morning, this. Except there's one man there, one South African man there, and he looked at us but didn't get much out of him at all. He obviously spoke English, but he didn't seem too happy to see us there. And the German sergeant in charge of the camp apparently told Jan that there wasn't much room for us there, something had to be done. Anyway, during the course of the day, we managed to get in baths. There was a bathroom there, we all took it in turns, the six of us, and we got all the dirt off us. And a local German doctor was called in, civilian doctor, to look at our feet. Our boots were cut off and feet were bathed and bandaged and things like that, you know, put some fat on them, you know, to take the frostbite down. And at last we were having some sort of a rest. We felt easier. About 5 o'clock, the rest of the South Africans came in from work. I suppose there was about 20 of them, all immaculately dressed in South African uniform. Not battle dress, they had khaki, but they were wore trousers and tunics with bits of red and gold here and there. They looked like Chinese admirals, but they were very smart, and their battle dress and their uniform was nicely pressed. They were clean shaven, they looked healthy, they looked everything that we should have looked. But although they were very polite to us, they didn't seem too happy to have us there. One thing that was obvious, there definitely wasn't a room for us. There was about, I suppose, about 10 rooms in the house. And they seemed to sleep about 3 to a room. They're only normal sized rooms, and they had them made out. They're in bedrooms with their tables and pictures hanging up. And they were living a pretty nice sort of life, what we could see of it. They went out to work in the town. They all had different jobs. Didn't seem like menial jobs, looked like clerks and things like that in small businesses, or we didn't inquire what sort of work they did. And they put our beds up, they put our mattresses on the floor in the corridors, on the landings, about 3 landings in the house, and there were 6 of us, and we had 2 to each landing. Jan and I stuck together. And that was our little home on the landing on top of a mattress. These men, they spoke to us, but very polite, you know, asked us where we come from and what the march was like and things like that. They hadn't heard anything about this march. Life went on pretty normal for them. They didn't see many air raids. It was a town and there wasn't much to bomb in the town, so they didn't see. They heard the air raid planes go over, but life was fairly quiet. They got their parcels from home, the food wasn't too bad, and they seemed quite satisfied with life. But as I said before, they weren't too happy about us being there. And during the course of the next few days, it came obvious that something would have to be done. And the Germans, there was about 5 Germans there in charge of this party. They weren't all there at the same time, but there was always 3 or 4 sleeping there. And after a few days, the Germans spoke to Jan and told him that there were several small camps in the vicinity. Some British camps, British soldiers. And when we were well enough, we'd be dispersed to these camps. Anyway, we were there. We had our... Life went on. We cut our beards off. And the South Africans gave us some bits of clothing. Trousers they didn't use anymore, or shirt, something like that. Anyway, we looked fairly presentable. We cut our beards off, we had a shave, we bathed, and we fed. That was the most important thing, feeding. As much as they could give us, we ate. And after about a fortnight, the German told Jan that we were to be moved. He said the 6 of us would be broken up and dispersed to different camps in the neighbourhood. He reckoned about 2 to each camp. Well, that suited us. Jan and I said we'd go together. And sure enough, after a couple of days, a small van arrived and took some of the other four blokes to different camps, and we got in the van as well, and I just went round different camps in the vicinity, dropping two of us off at each camp. I think we were the last to be dropped off. Anyway, we went outside the town, about 4 or 5 miles outside the town, a small village, ordinary looking village, few shops, nice looking houses, and a couple of looked like business buildings there. And we pulled up at one of these buildings, and the guard said, "This is it, this is your camp." Well, like the last one, it didn't look like a prisoner of war camp to us. It was just like an ordinary building, business building, with just a couple of just front doors, and that's it. You went inside. We went inside the stone steps. Up the steps we went. Went past the first floor, and we could hear some sort of light machinery going behind doors. Hear a clattering of women's voices and life going on generally. Up the second floor, and we could see an office and a typewriter going. Onto the third floor. This building was just like nearest I can say, like a school, like a kid's school, with the stone steps going upstairs. And we got to the top floor, and the top floor, a couple of swing doors, and through the swing doors, and we were in a fairly large room, or a small hall. Around the walls of this hall were beds. 12, 15 beds. Table in the middle. And sitting at this table was this English sergeant. Khaki shirt, stripes on him. He came forward and spoke to the German guard, and the guard disappeared. He said, "Right, lads, let's sit down and have a talk." Apparently this camp had been established at the beginning of the war in 1940, and most of the prisoners here, most of the British men here, were Dunkirk men, captured very early in the war. And the place itself made cigars. It was a cigar factory. They manufactured the paper downstairs. That was the machines going. And apparently the tobacco came in from somewhere else, and they wrapped them up. It was quite a skilled job, apparently, wrapping cigars up. And all the men worked in the factory. It was about 12 actual workers, and there was a sergeant and a corporal who didn't work, and there was a cook. On top of that, there was about 4 German guards. German corporal and 3 privates, as far as we could see. And they had rooms off the same top floor. Pretty large. Apart from this hall, there was a couple of rooms leading off the hall, and there was 2 rooms through the swing doors where the Germans were. And they seemed to have a pretty nice setup. As far as we could say, the English sergeant told us that they had no air raids or nothing like that. Most of them have been here 2.5 to 3 years, just working in this cigar factory. Nothing ever happened much. Now and again, one of them would go to another camp or fall sick and go back to the lager, something like that, and somebody would take their place, and the sergeant himself had been here for 2.5 years. He was the sort of British chap in charge, and he dealt directly with the Germans. And of course they had Red Cross parcels, but they sort of lived as one unit. All the parcels were pulled together. They had one chap cooking. He didn't go to work. The work incident was only downstairs. They didn't leave the building. Had this cook, and apparently he ran the place. The sergeant more or less did odd jobs. They couldn't force a sergeant to work anyway. That was in the Red Cross charter. So he more or less was just sort of in charge, like a foreman. And they didn't have a bad time at all. And of course that night tour, actually they came in lunchtime, the blokes from downstairs, about 10 of them, as I said before, all clean and smart looking, all well shaved. Quite a bit of interest we caused. We told them different things and where we come from, and they was quite interested to know about this march and about the camps we'd been at. When I told them we'd been at Auschwitz, they were quite interested. They'd heard about it vaguely, but didn't for 1 minute think what happened there was true. Well, they could see we were not too good a condition, and the sergeant told us, he said, well, until you're fully fit, you won't work. He said, you're obviously going to stay here now, but we know, like you, that the war can't last too much longer, but life goes on, and if you stay, you'll have to work because you're not NCOs, but you can't work if you're sick. And when your feet are better, you've got to work downstairs. We had quite a nice time there. The night came and had a bit of a radio, and you could hear local German music, and chaps sat around talking and bunting another, playing cards. And we noticed that two of the chaps disappeared. And there was no secret about it. When we politely inquired, they have said, oh, they've gone down the village. Down the village? What's this, in holiday camp? So they said, no, they said, it's quite common. Two of us go down the village almost every night. What about the German guards? Oh, they know all about it. They don't bother. It started some time ago. They don't bother. They know darn well we're going to come back again. So we said to them, don't you ever think of escaping? They said, well, let's face it. You've got to be very lucky to escape, haven't you? And the number of people that do eventually make it are very, very few and far between. And those that do make it, write books about it. That's how good it's got to be. For one thing, you've got to have a complete knowledge of the language, and you've got to have luck. Not only that, if we were recaptured away from here, we could finish up with one of those big lagers and worse off. And let's face it, one of us makes no difference to the war effort. We discovered long ago, and we thought long ago, that our best bet was just to stay here and see what happened. And the Germans realise this, they know there's no fear of us escaping because the thing's too good here. We got food, we got a nice job, we got a nice place to sleep. And he said, and what's more, believe it or not, we've got girlfriends. This took a bit of believing. We just couldn't understand this. But the chap said, well, that's how life is. It goes on. He said, that's where the blokes go. He said, two go out every night. The Germans made a rule, no more than two. And they've got to be back by 10. I said, where do they go? Well, they go in the village. They go in the houses. They've got girlfriends. well, we haven't all got girlfriends, but some of our other friends, elderly people, they go and visit and just sit for an hour with them and talk. And the villagers are very friendly. We've been here for 4 years, and it's a kind of a understanding that's grown up all the time. And we were flabbergasted, you know, we'd never known treatment like this. You know, these villagers were Germans, and the only Germans we knew were pigs. So we thought, Anne and I looked at each other and thought, well, we've landed in the right spot here. Let's hope we can stick here to the end of the war. Well, I think we were there for about a month, as far as my memory takes me. Our feet went back to normal. We got issued with new battle dresses. They had a few in store there, sent out by the Red Cross. We fed well. There seemed to be no shortage. There seemed to be plenty of bread there, supplied by the Germans. Wasn't too much meat, but potatoes they supplied. There were plenty of potatoes, and of course they did all right for smokes because they worked in this cigar factory. And you can imagine, even if only one cigar found its way upstairs every night, they didn't do too bad. And going out for their visits in the village, it was a nice way to fight a war. But after about 3 or 4 weeks, we were almost setting up to work. Then came the bombshell. One day the German guard came in, spoke to the English sergeant, and he told us the camp was breaking up. The camp is going on the march. We knew all about that marching, and the other chaps looked at us. They couldn't believe it. The Germans said, well, things are getting a bit unstable at the moment. The Russians are still pushing forward, and we've got orders to march all prisoners eastward towards German territory proper. This was in Czechoslovakia where we were, or it was then. So, a few days of packing a few bits and pieces. Two of the chaps went in at night to say goodbye to their lady friends. And on this particular morning, about 22 of us, something like that, got outside, all dressed in smart battle dress, with the English sergeant. We walked through the village, about 22 of us on a march. And as we walked through, one or two of the villagers were on the curbside waving to us. Couldn't believe it. And believe it or not, we saw one or two women with tears in their eyes. An English bloke saying, there she is, goodbye love, wave, and off we went. And we came to the main road, and we waited. And shortly after, a larger body of men marching came from another nearby area, and we joined up. Off we went. I turned to Jan and I said, here we go again. And off we went. Another little chapter finished and started. Anyway, I could go on and on recording different stories, but you don't get bored. And after all, it is only a part of history now. It happened so long ago, but as far as I'm concerned, it was just part of my life. Anyway, I've got a bit of tape left, and I think I'd like to finish off with quite an interesting little yarn. Actually, it's how the war finished for me. It's a string of events, I suppose, over the last 10 or 14 days of the war. And like I said before, truth is stranger than fiction. Well, everything I've said on these tapes is true. I've added nothing. In fact, I've left out a few of the gory details, but the main facts are just as I remember they happened. Anyway, back to my little story, the last fortnight of the war. By this time, the march had finished. Actually, it was only about 2 months after we left the last camp. The march had finished and the Germans had dispersed us to different camps. And it was obvious for everybody concerned that the war wasn't very far away from finishing. Things were happening rapidly. The Russians were advancing. The D-Day had happened long ago and the Allies were advancing in France and air raids were becoming more prominent. And we got little bits of news and we could see the way the Germans were acting, that things were heading for a flashpoint. And at the story, time the story starts, I was at a little camp, a small camp in a place called Brooks, B-R-U-X. It's a small mining town, coal mine there, and we were in a prisoner of war camp just outside the small town. Very small, almost like a large village. And there was a factory nearby, and most of us worked in the factory. It was a usual type of German factory, a petrochemical plant, and we all did different jobs. I, as usual, worked with an electrician, just the two of us, a German electrician. And we worked repairing lifts and electric motors and things like that. We had a little workshop. It was quite an interesting little job. It used to be taken there every morning by the guards and handed over to this German, and for the rest of the day I was under his command, doing things he told me to do. There's one thing I must mention here, and it's probably hastened the end of the war. Nearby was a town called Dresden. You've probably heard of Dresden, world famous before the war. Porcelain china and Dresden china was famous and very expensive. And it was an old world town, an old Bavarian town, beautiful old buildings and really sort of just like these pictures you see of Swiss mountain villages. But it was fairly large, it had quite a large population. Anyway, part of the story is also the fact that at the beginning of the war, in 1939, the Germans bombed Coventry in England. That made quite big news at the time. It was the first big air raid the Germans inflicted on us. I remember there were hundreds killed and large parts of the town were flattened. And the opinion goes that this later air raid on Dresden, which was about 4 years after, towards the end of the war, was a kind of a reprisal. Something like the atom bomb on Hiroshima to finish the Japanese war off. Anyway, we were lying in our bunks one night. Most of us were asleep. Somebody woke up and shouted. We all woke up with a start and looked outside, and the whole of the night sky was alight, just like daytime, although it was in the middle of the night. We rushed to the window and we saw for the first time what they called chandelier flares. We could hear these about two lone airplanes very high up, and they were dropping these flares, and they were hanging in the sky. They're like huge, something like a firework display, but they just stayed alight, and they lit the whole landscape up. The prisoner of war camp was almost in broad daylight. And at the same time, the air raid alarm went. And of course, by this time, we realised that something big was happening. And there we were, stuck in a prisoner of war camp, surrounded by barbed wire and guards. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we all panicked. We thought we were in for it, because obviously they're lighting up the sky above us, and slowly we could hear the drone of several planes coming very far away. Could hear the drone. We all rushed. There was about 100 of us in the camp, about 100, yeah. We all rushed for the barbed wire. The guards disappeared. They thought there was something in it too, and they thought, right, air raid shelters. So we just tore at the barbed wire and climbed over, just cut holes in the barbed wire and went right through, and disappeared into the countryside. Of course, by this time, the planes were almost overhead. And there must have been hundreds of them up there. We could hear them, drone after drone, these Super Hawks, huge things, four-engine planes, carried huge bomb loads. And they passed overhead. The sky was still bright, just like daytime. You could read a paper easily. And of course, we were just running. We were running for the woods nearby and hoping to get away from anything in the open which the planes might bomb. After all, a prisoner of war camp can look like a factory from up above, and the factory itself wasn't very far away, only a few hundred yards away. And then there was the coal mine. So that was it. But obviously, a target was Dresden. Of course, we didn't know at the time, but the planes went overhead, and of course, Dresden was lit up too. And the planes went in, and they bombed Dresden. They razed Dresden to the ground. I was in England during the air raids in 1939 and 40, and we were stationed in Cambridge, and we used to look out some nights and see them bombing London, and you could see the bright flashes in the sky. You know, and we were hoping that everything was all right at home. But this at Dresden was entirely different. The whole place was alight. And as the bombs were dropping, you could see the fires starting up. We were about a mile away, I suppose, a mile and a half away. And the noise of the planes was incessant, just drone after drone. And I think that the air raid must have lasted about an hour. Wave after wave came in, dropped their bombs, and they were away. There wasn't much anti-aircraft because Dresden was reckoned to be a non-target area. There wasn't too much in Dresden for the Allies to bomb. That's why it makes it all possible that it was a retaliation, and also probably an act to make them pack the war in.